thank you, Graham, for inviting me to do this. I will go on the theme that John Curry presented earlier. I will not give you the answer, I will give you an answer, which is what we should think about as we do our wargaming. I also wish to ask for your indulgence in that I have a lot of material to present very rapidly, so I'm afraid I'm going to be reading at you to get through the material as quickly as possible. But I hope I don't put you to sleep. Now, this presentation is based on my personal observations, my time in service, but do not necessarily reflect the views of my former or current employer. These caveats are commonly referred to as weasel words. That's why my mascot is up there. All right. When Graham approached me to make this presentation, the email specified the list of topics I should address. However, when I reviewed the UK Wargaming Handbook, it was evident the list of topics came from steps 4 and 5 of the UK Wargaming process. And now, as I've listened to this, the whole process. So it's proper, given the process of validation and refinement are really inseparable. But before discussing each of the topics, it's important to know what I mean by the term wargame and wargaming and my perspective. Fortunately, the United States doctrinal publication on joint planning process, known as Joint Publication 5-0, provides a definition which closely matches one authored by Dr. Peter Pearl. The publication goes on to describe best practices to employ for best effect in the conduct of a war game. These include such things as ensuring it is truly a game with competition between at least two opposing sides, with consequences for the actions of the opposing sides. Further, games are most effective when conducted iteratively, whether for training or for the development of new strategies. Now, even within the definition of war game, there are many types and styles which should be properly selected from according to the larger purpose. My remarks today will focus on exploratory games devoted to the purpose of innovation and diagnosis of competitions at the national level. The games I participated in and or designed professionally usually began with an unstructured problem, and we employed games to attempt to diagnose the competition between rivals or teams of rivals. As we gain understanding of the problem, the insights enable us to create structures or hypotheses, and we added rules and strategies as we went along. Okay, so why are we doing all this? Because someday in the future, someone in the field will have to take actions and he or she will not have time to think about it. They'll have to act on the doctrine developed and assessed by analysts beforehand. Hopefully they will also have participated in training games which will enable them to recognize what is occurring and employ the correct solution to the problem. The purpose of the work I was doing and what I think the UK Wargaming Handbook is intended to do is to develop effective strategies to successfully address the challenges of the changing modern and future environments. This environment includes changes in state and non-state actors, new technologies and innovations, new approaches to the competition, not to mention a multipolar environment reminiscent of the era of the Great Game, but now with far more destructive weapons. And instead of hybrid warfare, we should think of terms such as non-war military activities. To build these new strategies requires a thought experiment laboratory where we can make an effort to emulate the real world environment, observe what occurs in our emulation, generate some initial hypotheses of what will work, and conduct some initial tests on them. And so eloquently stated by the UK Vice Chief, these thought experiments need to be conducted in a safe to fail environment multiple times. Further, once the proper diagnosis and solution are identified, those who must execute the solution in the field must also be given a safe-to-fail environment in which to practice on. All of this requires the development of strategies. Each strategy is a hypothesis of what will work, subject to at least a thought experiment. Now, my father was an operations analyst, and he firmly believed the purpose of an analyst was to draw out the hypotheses or theory of victory from the mind of commander and then go off and test it, particularly the underlying assumptions, and then bring back those results for further discussion. This requires understanding the context of commander's theory. I can think of no better mechanism to draw these than a war game, and a colleague of mine, John Compton, has similar thoughts. However, any hypothesis competition must also address the fact that the opposing commander has his own theory of victory, and the choices of the two sides will have a large impact on the outcome of the competition. The Russian and Chinese military doctrine is based on dialectic materialism, which thoroughly embraces this and often says things, what is the main contradiction? Well, he's too powerful, so I'm going to do things that are not conventional. Now, Einstein tells us science tells us the way the world is, while religion tells us how the world should be. Peter Perlis' cycle of research is designed to gain the best of each of the tools available to us, each element complementing and making up for the limitations in each of the others. War games gives us an idea of what we could do. Analysis tells us how best to do it, while real-world exercises tell us if it can actually be done. In the end, the cycle of research serves the purpose of organizational learning to identify the best strategies. War games are the critical spark in the generation of the theories of victory. Now, based on Peter Perlis' work, and after being introduced to matrix games by gentlemen in this room, this august body, a theoretical construct of how we should employ the right style of games according to how well we understand the interactions between the competitors came to mind. Each stage in the continuum is based on how well the phenomenology has been developed. Now, I suggest this continuum provides not only an assessment of the current state, but also a roadmap of where it needs to go. Too many of us have suffered through events calling themselves war games, and we're not much more than a bunch of guys and gals sitting around a table. These unguided discussions can be an incredible waste of time and talent, usually because they lack the key elements of a real war game. They lack decisions and the consequences of the interaction. Even when these basic elements are met, these games fail to meet the larger purpose of increasing our understanding of the problem, fail to develop the phenomenology of areas of competition. Fairy dusting a problem with the magic of cyber or information operations does not advance our understanding of this. Therefore, in each iteration of the war games in the cycle of research, game designers must attempt to increase the rigor in how to adjudicate actions in these fields. Who did what to whom? How? To what effect? Etc. Rigor. These questions must be addressed and the game mechanics expanded to capture these factors in each iteration and recorded. Now, on the other side, it is very troubling to see analysts attempting to jump from generalities of seminar war games to implement a computerized modeling simulation. As a qualified modeling simulation modeler, I can tell you this is not valid, as the MNS requires the programmer to fully understand not only the phenomenology of the interactions, but also the probable actions of the opposing sides. Therefore, to do MNS properly, the analyst must move down the continuum to where the phenomenology is effectively captured in a rigid Kriegspiel and then implemented. Since in most cases, computer can only do what it is told, the simulation must also capture the probable actions and interests of the opposing sides. Now, my experience with emulation of our competitors has made clear to me their thought processes and their rational actor models are not the same as ours, and often cast into doubt the validity of many of these models. Now, there's a fundamental reason why we need to get this right. We are professionals, but many are not. I have heard of and participated in quite a number of memorable events with a large cast of thousands of subject matter experts. Some of these were actually war games. But after it was all over, I wondered, what did we accomplish? In some cases, wargaming has rightly been castigated for creating negative learning due to a lack of realism and rigor in their execution. Refueling planes going far, much further than they possibly could, etc. In the mind of the game designer and the sponsor, it might have been a thrilling exercise, but no matter how vivid and memorable the game was in the minds of the participants, it will not exist beyond their departure. Now, Peter Perla has warned us of the sinusoidal pattern of interest in wargaming over the years. One element of each of the downward trends in the pattern is the concern that other analysts have that all we are doing is playing a game of Dungeons & Dragons and having a good time, and not adding any value, or in some cases, creating negative value. I can tell you, with the departure of our champion, Bob Work, from the Pentagon, there's already forces at work attempting to redirect resources away from wargaming to better purposes. This bureaucratic process is in place. I have seen it. So, now it is critical that we police ourselves and act as a professional body. The market professional community is one that conducts a critical assessment and records what occurred, reports the insights gained, and advances its best practices. All right, so with all this in mind, what would the ideal analytic war game look like for the purposes that I do? First, it would require players to employ a doctrinal planning process before the game begins. Now, here are illustrations of the U.S. joint planning process, including the critical staff estimates, like your bombers can't fly that far, your tankers can't provide gas at that range, etc. Employing the planning process ensures teams are employing a coherent plan with due regard for realistic executability of the plan. Far too often, games are ad hoc collection of unassociated players who make up their moves as they go along, and this does not help anyone, particularly for diagnosing competitions. Note that within the planning process, there is this simple course of action war game, which is very different than the styles of war games most of us are talking about. But we want the players to conduct those, the simple course of action war game, before they step into the sophisticated game awaiting them that you are offering them. Here, we illustrate red and blue teams conducting their own joint planning process, including the design of their three courses of action and selecting one of those courses of action. The teams then execute their selected plan in the game with consequences for their actions and will need to adjust their plans as the game is played out. Upon completion of the game, rigorous analysis should occur, including instantiation of the two plans into a campaign analysis model and model simulation, and or other techniques as available and appropriate. Find your nearest operations analyst. Using these tools should gain improvements of the understanding of the conflict, including factors such as chance. This is why there's a need to conduct stochastic modeling. The planning process and the war game should also provide a rich data set in the 3x3 interaction matrix for additional modeling or analytic scenarios. Further, the analyst will then have the opportunity to refine the adjudication techniques for the next game. The refinements, results of previous games, and insights gained from the analysis of the 3x3 interaction matrix should then be briefed to the teams in preparation for their joint planning process in preparation for the next iterative game. And of course, you want to do these briefings because some of those players are going to be changed out. Of course, if you know Red's doctrinal planning process and have players who can emulate it, then you should employ it, and with the right people to do it, in place of the U.S. joint planning process or your own national joint planning process. Assuming you've conducted the ideal iterative game, there are some suggestions here and examples of how to analyze a war game and what to record in your post-game report. Here are four approaches that I know have been successfully employed, and it's usually a combination of these, not any single one. They each have their advantage and disadvantage. The first is the use of rapporteurs, often derogatorily referred to as fancy note takers. I think rapporteurs are a crucial element of any professional war game, and I'm sad to report that too often I've seen organizations who call themselves professionals quickly remove them as a cost-saving measure. Rapporteurs are a crucial element of any data collection plan in a game, but to be valuable, they must be trained. They need to understand the terminology the participants are going to be using. This is why, quite often, when I run a test game, I thrust the rapporteurs into the role of the players they will be monitoring during the course of the actual game. Now, surveys are valuable, particularly when players are given them immediately after a game is concluded, as each participant still has the game fresh in their mind, but before the hot wash begins. You can then obtain independent views of the game while the context is still fresh. However, players are often tired, particularly after a three-day game. They are often distracted by thoughts of traveling home, getting dinner, getting a beer. Players are also notorious for not filling out surveys, particularly if there's any time between the game and filling it out. So keep the survey short and don't let them leave the room until they complete it. Holding the bathroom key in your hand often has that effect. Inevitably, there will be some desire to conduct a hot wash to get the group talking about their experience. For games that have been conducted well, players are often impatient to discuss their experience. The best questions are when one side asks their competitors, more often their allies, what were you thinking when you did such and such? However, you also find dominant voices can often drown out others. This is why I recommend the survey followed by the hot wash. Now, Stephen Downs Martin and others recommends foregoing the survey and the hot wash and employing a structured analytic technique instead. In this case, a silent clustering drill to guide the discussion. This technique encourages divergent thinking prior to convergent analysis, avoiding many of the pathologies of brainstorming. And if you ask Stephen Downs Martin about those pathologies, he is happy to talk to you at length. Here's an example of the silent clustering technique which was employed in the Global 2000 war game. It started with a question directed towards the purpose of the game itself, network-centric operations. Each player wrote down their answer on a yellow sticky note and silently placed it on a knowledge board. Then each made an effort to group the sticky notes based on their content, silently. Only after this was done was a guided discussion conducted to relate the groups together and to come up with an overall assessment of the answer to the question. Now, in the vein of keeping the survey short, and in my case directed towards the concept of the wargaming continuum, I offer this list of questions. Now, I'm certain that other members of this august body can provide their own lists, but again, I caution towards keeping the list short. Now, there are many ways to analyze a game. Here I will demonstrate how I employ critical event analysis in support of the cycle of research. Rapporteurs are crucial in the data collection plan. They're tasked with recording the deliberations and actions of the team, with a focus on the range of actions the teams considered, the actions they chose to take, and the rationale behind it. Hopefully, we can obtain explicitly or implicitly the team's strategy, their theory of victory, their working hypothesis of what would work. The data collection plan should also capture the flow of the events. This flow will change based on the choices of the opposing sides and probably based on some form of adjudication. There will be many of these. But the challenge would be to identify which event was critical to the flow of the game. But I cheat. I ask the players which they thought was the most important event was in the game. Now I know where to start when I conduct my analysis step in the cycle of research. The importance of iteration is threefold. First, by running a game with a group of subject matter experts, you can gather understanding of the phenomenon of the competition is taking place across. Hopefully, you'll conduct some analysis of this and determine new rules to implement this understanding and improve your game design. The larger process should then enable you to diagnose the competition and develop effective strategies. Therefore, after a game is completed, you should identify the critical event that drove the game. These are the hypotheses John Compton was talking about. Here's where you should conduct your analysis. Or if you are so lucky, you can conduct an exercise or limited field experiment in the real world to capture this. Can you actually do that? Now, all this is to continue the development of the phenomenology down the continuum of wargame styles. All of this is that one day a commander in the field can receive a short, simple order which tells him what to do, how to do it in order to achieve what results. The what, how, and why should be in doctrinal terms that he or she understands and is based on solid analysis, including what his or her opponent will potentially do. They don't have time to think about these problems in the field. We are doing it for them so they can respond. Now, while at the Office of Net Assessment, I had the privilege of working with an archive of hundreds of games conducted over decades. Many, but not all, of the strategies suggested in the games were instrumental in winning the Cold War and shaped the environment we now live in. Many were battles that never occurred. Now, in my examination of these archives of war games, I conducted both qualitative and quantitative analysis. My qualitative efforts were to identify recurring themes, which spoke towards the diagnosis of the overall environment, or strategies that, when applied, seemed to dominate the competition. The qualitative analysis was more difficult. In some cases, it was often how often was one side or the other effective when they employed a tactic or operational procedure, etc. Others were as simple as how often certain capabilities were employed. You'd be surprised how many wild idea capabilities get poured in and they're never picked up in the game. And there are many reasons why that occurs. Now, overall, there is some serious issues of governance of an iterative wargaming process. It is not simple. In the United States, the Office of the Secretary of Defense established a body to oversee the reinvigoration and development of the American Defense Wargaming Community. The Defense Wargaming Alignment Group, or DWAG, is tasked with improving the state of wargaming, identifying and promulgating best practices, and providing resources and lessons learned to the community. The member which created this organization also assigned members to take the lead on different timelines based on the organizational competencies. However, we continue to encounter limitations due to the number of master war game designers available. As often pointed out, many of us are pigment challenged. We need to fix that. Now, there are some interim solutions to the shortage, including further collaborations between members, such as when OSDK provides war game designers to run games for the combatant commanders. The DWAG has also addressed the shortage by sponsoring mobile training teams, certificate courses and workshops to assist aspiring game designers in their path towards becoming a master game designer. And many people who do that are in this room. Now, the DWAG oversees the Wargaming Incentive Fund, which are applied to augment war games within the department that address at least one of the areas of concern, particularly those which address overlaps and seams between theaters, threats, and or capabilities. These funds are prioritized towards, but not solely devoted to, the five major threats, the four countries, plus the plus one, and the three capability areas, the plus three. To receive the funds, the DoD organization must commit to providing a report on the game or workshop, etc., which in turn is placed in the War Game Repository. While the War Game Repository exists on the U.S. Secure Internet system, it does contain non-classified games and reports, and there are efforts underway to enable access to unclassified data for war colleges and potentially allies. The goal is to enable the cycle of research within the department and enable new games to provide intellectual resources, points of contacts, take advantage of past events, use best practices, and increase the rigor of departmental wargaming. All right, I went through a lot of material really quickly, so I wish to prioritize the first few questions towards questions of clarification of material that I've either said or put up on the board. So let's start with anyone has questions of what the heck did he say, or what did he just throw up there? All right, well, I guess my strange accent did not throw you all off. All right, so on to, oh, yes. Trying to use, oh, that's the shift key, not the enter key. All right. So I stole this from two of my colleagues, and this is how I and these folks try and categorize where the games are. This is not to say you cannot borrow methodologies from the other realms. And in fact, I encourage it because the greatest amount of development of methodologies has been in the commercial world, while DoD has, not done its homework. So I encourage the borrowing of methodologies from the other areas, but you must recognize the caveats that come with that as you design your game. For example, I very much took, once I was introduced to Matrix Games by Tom, I took it back to the Office of Net Assessment, and we ran some pretty high-level important war games using the general methodology with certain adjustments. We weren't using the 2d6 method for adjudicating arguments. They were different, particularly when they came to technical elements and other classifications. But the general understanding where I'm using the group as the adjudicators, because they have the collective knowledge of the phenomenology. There was no one person who could say, I am the expert on this phenomenology. We had to gather from the knowledge of people, whether they were engineers, operators, etc., in the room. And that's what I thought was very powerful about Matrix for those particular scenarios. Yes, sir. Okay, so the phrase non-war military activities is a doctrinal term used by our competitors. So you can gain that by actually reading what they're writing. Going to the comment earlier that this is not something new. In terms of the second portion, the DoD response to it, yes, there is an active whole of government effort to try and understand the problem and the competition and actions to take to it. But that's as far as I can describe that. Any other questions beyond, we're well past the, did you understand what I said? But if there are other questions or comments. It is a bit personality dependent, but the people who were checking those were in OSD CAPE. It remains to be seen exactly how that plays out because it was from my understanding, it was personality dependent. And some organizations don't necessarily put their work in the depository, and I'll admit to that because it's some of the work that organizations I've been with can't be put at that level of classification. In the back, to the left, or to my left, your right.
Much of your descriptive material seems to be focused on the operational level of warfare, but do your principles still hold true for the strategic and geopolitical levels?
Yes. Precisely because you need to force people at many of those games, and this is my harsh criticism for many geopolitical games where there is a severe lack of rigor, mostly because it's a 100 one-off games. So it's like the old saying, we haven't been learning for 10 years, we've been learning 1 year 10 times in a row, and many of these seminar games need to get off the dime and start adding more rigor into what they're doing, because I don't think they're advancing to the purposes that I describe. There's a gentleman to your left that also had his hand up.
You seem to be drawing a distinction between operational analysis and war game design. Do you consider the different disciplines that we seem to need to work together, or is war game design just a facet of operational analysis in this context?
So, as a master's degree in operations analysis, emphasis in modeling simulation, my degree was in, and in the Military Operations Research Society 2016 Wargaming Workshop report lays out these two opposing views. Some say that wargaming is a subset of simulation, and others say, no, this is a humanistic approach and very different, and there was this clash, and Bob Work basically said, well, we went with the former attitude that it was just a subset, and that's not doing it for me, because I'm in these intellectual cul-de-sacs that I don't want to be in. So I'm going to turn to the people who say this is a humanistic approach. My answer is they are separate but complementary tools, and in any well-designed war game, you're going to use operations analysis techniques to capture those phenomenologies we describe, but the game is still about human decision making under conditions of uncertainty. And when we lose sight of that, and we've lost the war game, particularly if we lose sight of the dialectic between two opposing sides as they look at the problem. Gentlemen in the back.
Try and apply those models to everything. There's a parallel
Thank you for the compliment, but I wish to foot stomp the idea that if your shop can only run one type of game, then you're not a master war game designer. And if you intend to be a master war game designer, you should be playing lots of games to familiarize yourself with the wide range of techniques that are available out there. If you are an artist, you go to the National Portrait Gallery or other places to see what other artists have done to improve your technique. Same thing for game designers. You must play lots of games, not just look at them, play them so that you can understand the methodologies that are there and understand the problems in some of these designs so you can select the right tool for the right question, just as an operations analyst will try and select the right technique for the question at hand. Not everything is a Markov chain. So just thank you for allowing me to foot stomp on that theme. And thank you for your patience with me.
Brilliant. Thank you.